Hare Krishna. Shall we start? Okay. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pahavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Dadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Hare. So today we continue with our discussion on the six opulences of Lord Krishna, and today we'll be discussing the opulence of knowledge. So day before yesterday we discussed about the opulence of beauty, and there the theme that we discussed was how Krishna has, in one sense we can say, custom made beauty. You know, his beauty he reveals in a way that is most suitable for the devotee in that particular rasa. So for the Vatsalya Ras devotees, he manifests Bala Rupa or Kaumara Rupa. For the Sakya Ras devotees, he manifests Pauganda Rupa. And for the Madhura Ras devotees, he manifests Kaishor or Yauvana Rupa. And then we concluded by discussing how with the combination of scriptural description, sensory perception and devotional contemplation, we at even our level can experience and relish Krishna's beauty to some extent. So now going to the next opulence of knowledge. Now one of the defining attributes of God is omniscience. Omniscience means that the word science originally comes from the Greek sia, which means to know in a systematic way. So science means that body of knowledge which studies in a systematic way. So omniscience is one who knows everything in a systematic way. So God is generally understood to be omniscient, and one of the defining attributes of God, and even Krishna explicitly mentions that in the 7th chapter, 26th verse, when he says, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna avishyani chabhutani mam tuved nakashchana. He describes that I know all things and all beings, past, present and future, but me no one knows. So you know, there are things and there are beings. Things are non-sentient and beings are sentient. So Krishna knows both. He knows all things and all beings. And this verse comes just before the verse on this verse comes just after the verse about how the living entity is covered, and that's why he cannot know. So we have the verse about Naham Prakash Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavritaha Mudhoyam Nabhijanati. Krishna explains that all people know him. So he knows all people, he is telling in this verse. But in the previous verse he has said that all people do not know him. Naham Prakash Sarvasya. Why? Yoga Maya Samavrita. He says that I am covered over by the Yoga Maya. And those who are the people who know, Mudho Yamna Bhijanati Loko Mamajimavyam. Those who do not know my transcendental position, they are mudhas and they cannot know me. So therefore, in this verse, Krishna is telling that yes, this illusion covers all living entities, but it doesn't cover me. So in the previous, in the 25th verse, Krishna said that Naham Prakash Sarvasya, all people do not know me. Some people know me. Now in this verse, he goes further and he says, Mam tu Veda na Kashchana. Na Kashchana means nobody knows me. So nobody knows me in full. So this is an attribute of Krishna, that he has supreme and complete knowledge, whereas the ordinary living entity doesn't have that knowledge. Now of course, everybody in this world likes to acquire knowledge. And that people like to acquire knowledge so that they can impress others with that knowledge. So some in material circles, as I was telling yesterday, you know, now in the information technology, information is said to be power. It's not knowledge that is power, it's information that is power. So if you have the right information, you can strike the right deals, purchase the right shares, take the best mobile, get the best laptop, whatever. So people who know a lot are to some extent respected. They command respect, they demand also respect many times. Whatever it is, that knowledge is an opulence that attracts people. Now when we say Krishna is omniscient, he has all knowledge. Now the interesting part about Krishna is that although he has all knowledge, we know, how does he have that knowledge? Directly and indirectly. In the invocatory verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Anvayad itartaschateshu abhigyasvarat. Anvayad means directly, itartash means indirectly. So the different acharyas have given different meanings of this Anvayad itartash. So one is that because this whole universe is nothing but the body of Krishna. This whole universe is nothing but the body of Krishna. In fact, this is the defining analogy of the Sri Sampradaya. In the Sri Sampradaya, the universe is considered, the God or Vishnu is considered to be the soul, and Jiva and Prakriti, matter and spirit, are considered to be the body of that soul. So this is called as Parinamvad. So the Lord is the soul, and the whole universe and all living beings are his body. So Anvayad means, just as if a fly comes and sits on my hand, others, if I am conscious and awake, nobody else has to tell me a fly is sitting on your hand. Automatically I come to know Anvayad. So because there is a direct connection. So like that, Krishna, because this whole universe in one sense is his body. This was demonstrated by Krishna as the Vishwarup in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And there are many verses also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atha Vishvesha Vishvatman Vishwamurte Svakeshume Sneha Pashamim Chindi Duram Pandushu Nishmeshu. So in this verse, Kunti Maharani in 1842 describes that Vishwamurte, that you are the form of the universe. So in this way, Krishna is directly conscious of everything because everything is his body. Now this is one way of understanding it. That's why we will see that Kunti Maharani is using the word Atha Vishvesha, Vishvatman and Vishvamurte. So you are the soul of the universe and you are the form of the universe. So what does that mean? Now in the second canto there is an elaborate description of the Vishwarup, and there it is described that the Vishwarup is not an eternal form of the Lord. The Lord can manifest the Vishwarup when he wants, but there is no Vishwarup loka in the spiritual world where there is a Vishwarup eternally existing. In fact, when Arjuna sees the Vishwarupa, he is amazed initially, vismaya, and soon that vismaya changes into bhaya, fear. So there Srila Prabhupada describes that a pure devotee is not interested in such a godless display of opulence. Now this is a very powerful statement to make. In fact, it can be controversial also what Srila Prabhupada is saying, because God is displaying his opulence and Prabhupada is saying that devotee is not interested in such a godless display of opulence. Why is Prabhupada saying like this? Because God's primary opulence is not as just raw power. No, a display of raw naked power does not attract the heart. It may create fear and force a person to bow down, but that doesn't invoke love. So therefore, Arjuna does not like this, and Arjuna says, "My dear Lord, please show your Saumya Rupa." So then Saumya Rupa, this is Ugra Rupa, so please show your gentle form. So he said, then he shows his Saumya Rupa, and then Arjuna can reciprocate love with him. So the spiritual world is a place of reciprocation of love, and the Vishwarupa, being a form of raw power and might, is not suitable for reciprocating love. So there is no Vishwarupa Loka in the spiritual world. But there is the Supreme Lord who can reveal the Vishwarupa whenever he wants. So now Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, that everything is situated in me and still I am different from everything and everything is not situated in me. He contradicts himself apparently in 9.4 and 5 in the Bhagavad Gita. Matsthani sarvabhutani, he says first, ennacha matsthani bhutani. 9.4 is matsthani sarvabhutani, everything is situated in me. 9.5 is namcha matsthani bhutani, everything is not situated in me. Pashyame yogam aishwaram, this is my extraordinary aishwarya, this is my mystic potency. So anvayad means because Krishna is present everywhere as the because the Vishwarupa is his own body, he is conscious of everything. But you know, we also know that Krishna is God, is transcendental. He is in the spiritual world, and he has handed over the management of the material world to the devatas, supervised by his own expansion of the Purusha avataras. So there is this achintya bheda bheda relationship between Krishna and the Purusha avatara, the Vishnu forms who look after this world. In one sense, Krishna and Vishnu are non-different. They are different forms of the same Lord. But at the same time, we know in the one of the last chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, of the 10th canto, 89 chapter, I think, we have Krishna going with Arjuna to Mahavishnu Loka, because Mahavishnu has stolen the sons of the Brahmana. And there Mahavishnu described that, I was eager to see you, that's why I did this. So this means that apparently Mahavishnu and Krishna are different. And we also have the pastimes where Krishna reveals himself to the gopis in the form of Vishnu, and the gopis offer obeisances and ask, where is Krishna? So from the tattva point of view, there is no difference between Krishna and Vishnu. But from the leela or the rasa point of view, there is a huge amount of difference. So in the other sampradayas, the non-difference is highly focused. For example, the Madhava Sampradaya quote the verses saying that, you know, anyone who sees any differences in the various forms of Vishnu is having a Naraki Buddhi. Now the Goswamis agree to that. From the tattva point of view, there is no difference between any of the forms of Vishnu. But at the same time, especially in the Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami elaborately establishes how Krishna is the original and the highest form of Vishnu. So, Itartas means Krishna is conscious of everyone through his agents. Through his agents. So, even Vishnu, on a few occasions, Srila Prabhupada uses the word, you know, that material world is managed by the demigods like Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. So, now Vishnu is not a demigod, but Prabhupada is, in such references, emphasizing the difference between Krishna and Vishnu from a rasa point of view. So, anvayad means Krishna is directly conscious, itartas means he is indirectly conscious. But the point is, for our discussion here, we are not talking elaborately about the similarity or the oneness or the difference between Krishna and Vishnu. That could be an entirely different class. But our point here is that Krishna is aware of everything, anvayad and itartas, directly and indirectly. So, now, Krishna's omniscience is revealed in his leelas many times. So, we know when Bhishma Pitamaha was incited by Duryodhana on the 8th day of the battle, the Kauravas faced a severe reversal. Not only were their armies routed, but even Duryodhana, who confronted Bhima, was severely wounded and almost killed by Bhima. And that was very, very humiliating and frustrating for Duryodhana. And so Duryodhana went and tried to incite Bhishma. So Bhishma said, I will take these 5 arrows. And with these 5, I will invest them with my mystic potency that I have acquired for my years and years of celibacy and austerity. And with this, tomorrow I'll kill the 5 Pandavas. And then Duryodhana was very happy. He thought his game plan has succeeded. So then he immediately told Bhishma Pitama, please give me those 5 arrows. I'll keep them safely. So Bhishma said, okay. And that evening, as Arjuna was planning to retire, Krishna told him, the day is not yet over. You have something very important to do still. So what is that? He said, you have to go and get 5 arrows from Duryodhana. So Arjuna understood that Krishna must be having something up his sleeve. So he agreed. So then he put on a white dress and got on a single horse instead of a chariot. Got on a single horse and went without any weapons to the Kaurava camp. And at least as long as Bhishma was the commander of the army, the Kauravas also were following rules and regulations. When Drona became the commander from the 11th day onwards, because Ashwatthama had been contaminated by Duryodhana's association, Drona also became contaminated by his association and attachment to Ashwatthama, and then all the ethical rules started getting flouted from the 11th day onwards. But on the 10th day, this was on the night of the 8th day, and Arjuna went, and the guards received him very cordially, and he said, I want to see Duryodhana. And immediately he was escorted to Duryodhana's room. And Duryodhana was about to retire for the night, and he was very surprised. Oh Arjuna, welcome. What can I do for you? Do you want the kingdom? If you want, I will give it to you in charity. So now as Duryodhana spoke this, he knew within his heart that Arjuna, being a self-respecting Kshatriya, would never ask for the kingdom. And Arjuna immediately replied. He says, the time for giving the kingdom in charity is already gone. He says, now we will take the kingdom in war. But I need something else right now. Says, yes, what is it? He says, do you remember that when we rescued you from the Gandharvas, when they had imprisoned you? Arjuna chose his words carefully, because this incident and this memory was rankling Duryodhana for so many years. He had gone to Kamyavan to flaunt his wealth and power, and he had been insulted and tied up in front of his women by the Gandharvas, and Arjuna and Bhima had come to release him. So at that time, just to try to keep his Kshatriya honor, he had said, oh Arjuna, I'm grateful to you for the help that you have given me. In the future, if you want anything from me, I'll give it to you. So, I will give it to you, I said. So Arjuna had said, I don't need anything right now. In the future, if I need, I'll ask. So Krishna had reminded Arjuna of this. This particular word of Duryodhana's, heart, it was as if arrows had been pierced in his heart. But still he kept a composed face and he said, yes, Arjuna, tell me, what can I do for you? So, I believe you have 5 arrows. So please give me those 5 arrows. So he had just kept the arrows under his bed. So he bent down and took the arrows and gave it. And as Arjuna was very calmly turning around and going away, he said, Arjuna, just a minute. Please tell me, who told you about these 5 arrows? Because when the discussion between Bhishma and Duryodhana had been reaching its climax, when Duryodhana was able to see that Bhishma had become incited by his words and was about to take some vow or make some promise, Duryodhana had dismissed all the attendants so that he would be alone, and nobody practically knew. So now there were always spies in both sides of the army from the opponent side, and they were always doing espionage. But Duryodhana had taken care that no espionage agent, no spy would be able to find out about these 5 arrows. So, that's why he was very interested. Who told you about these 5 arrows? So Arjuna just turned around, smiled at him and said, Krishna. And Arjuna walked out. And Duryodhana was so frustrated, he pounded his fist into his palm. Is this Krishna? He really seems to be God. He really seems to be God. So, he thought that he had succeeded in doing a good cover-up, hiding job, so that no spy would come to know. But he did not know the Supreme Lord as a supreme spy. The Supreme Lord is supreme in everything. As a spy, he is a supreme spy. So he is present in the heart of Duryodhana also. So what can Duryodhana hide from him? Of course, although he thought that temporarily that thought passed his mind, Krishna is God. But he said, no. Why should God fight against me? I am not such a bad person. Of course, everybody thinks that I am bad. Everybody calls me bad. But they don't understand me. Because they are ordinary human beings, they cannot understand me. But surely, God should not misunderstand me. Oh, how can God come in this world and how can God fight against? Why should God fight against me? Therefore, he said, Krishna cannot be God. But still, how did Krishna come to know about this? Troubled by such thoughts, he just sinks into a fitful sleep that night. So here, we see Krishna exhibits his omniscience to protect Arjuna. To protect Arjuna from danger. There are many, many incidents in the Mahabharata, especially where Krishna exhibits his omniscience. So, another incident is when Jayadrath is about to be killed by Arjuna on the final day, then Krishna tells Arjuna that, you know, cut off his head in such a way that his head goes and falls, not on the ground, but in the lap of Jayadrath's father, Vridhakshatra. Because Jayadrath's father, Vridhakshatra, in order to get a blessing, get some protection for his son, had asked from Shiva the benediction that whoever causes his son's head to fall on the ground will have his own head blown to smithereens. So, Arjuna did not know this vow, but Krishna knew this blessing of Shiva. And on Shiva's blessing, Krishna told Arjuna, send the arrow, the Brahmastra, to cut off Jayadrath's head in such a way that the head will go and fall on the lap of Vridhakshatra. So when the head went and fell on the lap of Vridhakshatra, Vridhakshatra was in meditation in the Simant Panchak, several miles away. And he was in trance and he suddenly felt something on his lap, falling there. And he opened his eyes. To his horror, he saw it was a skull. He just rose up and shook it away. And as soon as the skull fell on the ground, his own head cracked into pieces. So here Krishna exhibited his omniscience to protect Arjuna once again. And like that, there are many incidents. You know, when Karna exhausts his Shakti weapon using it to kill Ghatotkacha, Krishna is ecstatic, he's dancing and very cheerful. And Arjuna asks, Krishna, Hari Bol, please switch off your mic. Oh, Krishna, our beloved Ghatotkach, Bhima's son, has been killed. How can we be joyful at this moment? And Krishna puts his hand on Arjuna's shoulder and says, oh Arjuna, from the day that Karna got his Shakti weapon, I lost my night's sleep out of anxiety for you. That Shakti weapon is so powerful that it can kill Indra or even Rudra. Not Shiva, who is and Sadashiv in the spiritual world, but the expansion of Shiva, who is there are 11 Rudras in the material world, can kill even that Rudra. That Rudra is not eternal. Sadashiv is eternal. So then he said, that's why I arranged to have this Shakti used away. So Arjuna had been aware that Karna had Shakti, but he did not know its power. Krishna knew its power. So like that, in the Mahabharata, Krishna exhibits his omniscience to protect his devotees. But there are other incidents where Krishna partially hides his omniscience and he acts as if he is an ordinary human being. When Shalva is a demoniac king who attacked Dwarka, and at that time Krishna is with the Pandavas, and then Krishna comes to know about the attack. The battle goes on for many, many days, and Krishna's son Pradyumna and the other warriors over there are fighting gallantly. But Shalva, with his mystical airplane, which can sometimes be visible, sometimes be invisible, is harassing the Dwarka Vasis and the Dwarka forces. So Krishna comes there to the rescue, and at that time, realizing that Krishna is too difficult to defeat, after a brief skirmish with him, Shalva disappears and uses a mystic power. And he brings Vasudeva over there. And he brings Vasudeva, or actually it's not Vasudeva, it's a dummy of Vasudeva. It's a false form of Vasudeva. And he says, oh Krishna, you think you are such a great Kshatriya, right in front of your eyes I will kill your father. And he picks up his sword and chops off that form of Vasudeva into two. And Krishna is aghast. Krishna is aghast over there. Oh, my father has been killed. And he thinks, you know, but how could he have possibly gained control of my father? Actually, I had kept Balramji to protect the doors of Dwarka and to protect it. How could he have possibly defeated Balramji? No, it's not possible. But I saw that he's been killed. And then Krishna comes like, oh, it's not Vasudev, it's a dummy Vasudev. So now the Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur and the Dadacharya explain that how can Krishna not know? Actually, Krishna always knows, but sometimes to enhance the pastime. So the fight is going on, and to give Shalya an illusory sense of victory, Krishna pretends as if he does not know, as if he is overwhelmed. We see the same thing even in Hiranyakashipu's fight with Narasimhadev. Narasimhadev catches Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu, by his struggle, releases himself. He cannot catch me, I am powerful enough. They describe that like a cat plays with a rat before eating it, allowing it to run away and catching it, allowing it to run away. Like that Narasimhadev is doing with Hiranyakashipu. So the same thing is what Lord Krishna is doing with Shalya. So there are some times when Krishna does not exhibit his complete omniscience, sometimes he seems as if he does not know. And then he gets to know. The same is described in the Bhagavatam also, in the Vrindavan Leela, when Brahmaji steals the cowherd boys. So at that time Krishna goes searching. He says, I'll go and search for the cows. He cannot find them after searching for them also. And then he comes back and he finds that the gopas have also disappeared. And he says, hey, what has happened? How did everyone disappear? And he thinks for a moment, and then he understands that, oh, actually it is Brahmaji who has taken them. So here we see Krishna sort of hiding his omniscience so that he can enhance the sweetness of the pastime. This is also actually there in the especially Vrajalila, when Krishna is searching for the gopis. You know, there is no excitement if Krishna pretends that Krishna says that he already knows where the gopis are, where Radharani is, where the gopis are. Then there is no rasa there, no separation can be felt by Krishna. So we have to understand that, you know, Krishna has his supreme opulences, he has his supreme knowledge, he has a supreme strength, supreme beauty. But generally in Vrindavan he exhibits only one opulence, and that is his beauty, his supreme sweetness, Madhuri. And that is one opulence which he exhibits constantly. And the other opulences he will exhibit depending on what is best suited for the Leela. So where omniscience is not suited for the Leela, you know, Krishna, when he is separated from Radharani, is asking everyone. This is Radharani, the gopis we described in the 10th canto, when Krishna disappears, they are asking the trees, they are asking the deer, they are asking the tulsi, where is Krishna? So there are times, you know, the Acharya's literature describe where Krishna is separated from Radharani, he is asking everyone, where is Radharani, have you seen Radharani? So this separation is possible only when there is no omniscience. So Krishna does not exhibit his omniscience sometimes to intensify the Leela. Now, the same theme is seen in the Asat Sabhaya, in the Sabha at in the Kauravas and Pandavas assembly in what is now the New Delhi, what Prabhupada called as Hastinapur earlier. So what happens is that when Krishna, when Draupadi is dragged in by the cruel and powerful arms of Dushasana on the instruction of Duryodhana, at the instigation of Karna. So what happens? The Pandavas are mortified and they are helpless because they have already lost themselves in the gambling match. And it is described that when Draupadi is dragged like this,
दुर्वारवाक्यं परिगृह्य कृष्णा रुगीव भीता तु कथं कथञ्चे सभां प्रविष्टा मनसा जुहावा.
So it's described as, and then she was forcibly dragged like a frightened deer into the assembly by the powerful arms of the Shasana. Draupadi was so frightened and she called out Krishna. First she called out internally and then she called out externally. And in one sense, Krishna came there as the sari of Draupadi and they were not able to strip her naked. But actually nobody saw Krishna over there. Even Draupadi, she was in sort of almost like samadhi, calling out to Krishna with her hands upraised, with her eyes closed, and she did not see Krishna. Of course she saw Krishna in her heart, but nobody saw Krishna over there. What they saw was the miracle that she was just being pulled and pulled and pulled, and she was going around like a spinning top with a thread on top, which is pulling the spinning top round and round and round. She was getting pulled round and round, but it was a spinning top with a thread that was endless. So the sari just kept getting pulled on and on and on, and they were not able to fulfill their demoniac desire to see Draupadi unclothed. But later on, when Pandavas are exiled to the forest, at that time Krishna comes to meet them. And at that time, Krishna exhibits regret. And he says, I did not know that his gambling match was there. If the gambling match, I had known the gambling match was there, then I would have personally come and stopped the gambling match from happening. Because gambling is the source of evil and conflict and destruction. Gambling should never take place. Especially at such a scale and between relatives who already have some animosity between them. And in fact, initially, you know, when Krishna comes, Draupadi is very distressed. All the Pandavas are distressed. Draupadi says, Krishna, why didn't you come? Krishna, I wanted you, we needed you over there. Why didn't you come at that time? So what does Krishna say? Krishna doesn't tell Draupadi that, you know, you don't have faith in me. You don't have faith that whatever I do is good for everyone. You don't have faith that I only protected you. I only send that sari. You know, here, see, Krishna as God is so sensitive to the emotions of his devotees. And he doesn't, Draupadi is distressed. See, even when a devotee has faith, yes, a devotee has faith that whatever happens, happens with the knowledge of Krishna, happens with the sanction of Krishna, and it is good. But still there are natural emotions that come. And Draupadi asks Krishna, Krishna, how did you not come at that time? So Krishna says, I didn't know that this was happening, and moreover, he says, I was busy with a crisis. You know, sometimes the manager says, why didn't you come there? He says, you know, sometimes the brahmachari class is there and some devotee is not there. And I was fighting a crisis. So Krishna says, I was fighting a crisis. What was the crisis? He says, this was the time when Shalva had attacked Dwarka, and I was busy fighting against Shalva. And then immediately, you know, Yudhishthir, in order to get the mind of Draupadi off those ghastly incidents in the assembly, asks, really? How did Shalva attack? Please tell us about the fight. And then Krishna elaborately describes the fight, about how Shalva had this invisible this plane which could become visible and invisible, appear at multiple places at the same time. And they are all Kshatriyas and Draupadi Kshatrani, and by hearing about the fight, they become very interested in it. And then the whole subject ends. But here, we see Krishna, what does he say? I didn't know. If I had known, I would have come immediately. And what to speak of stopping the disrobing, I would have stopped everything before that only. So, now similarly, we see again, now I'll tell another incident and then we will discuss the philosophical implications of this. So, on the 12th day of the Battle of Kurukshetra, Dronacharya makes the Chakravyuh, and he traps Abhimanyu, fights gallantly, and finally by a wicked conspiracy, six Kaurava warriors attack him and kill him.
ruthlessly.
That evening, when Arjuna is coming back, now Arjuna says, I am feeling some very strong misgivings. I am seeing inauspicious omens on my body and around me. He says, I don't hear any victory sounds, the trumpets being blown to welcome the warriors back. And whoever looks, now the soldiers or warriors are looking at me in the eyes. They are taking their glances away. And every day Abhimanyu is here to welcome me. I don't see Abhimanyu over here. And then finally as they, Krishna tells them, don't worry, everything is, must be, I think all the soldiers must be exhausted today. Krishna is initially very silent. They don't have any doubts, he says. And then when they enter into the assembly, where the pandal, where all of them are meet for the evening strategic planning meeting for the next day, as soon as they enter, Krishna, Arjuna's eyes go straight to the throne of Abhimanyu, and it is empty. And Abhimanyu, and Arjuna's heart almost stops beating, and he goes straight to Yudhishthira and offers respects, and he asks very, you know, very agonized tone. He says, oh Yudhishthira, I am feeling very apprehensive. There are no victory sounds. All of you are looking so sad, and there is no Abhimanyu. What has happened? And then Yudhishthira explains everything to him. And when he explains everything to him, Arjuna is mortified. He initially is stricken with grief. And as he is stricken with grief, his grief slowly starts turning into anger. And he initially says, oh Krishna, at least you must have known that this had happened. Why didn't you tell me? I would have gone and rescued Abhimanyu. And, surely that Abhimanyu, he must have called out to me when he was surrounded by all these warriors, helpless. Alas, I was not there to help him. He turns around and says, oh Bhima, oh Yudhishthir, oh warriors, are the weapons on your body just the ornaments of a woman? All of you together could not protect my son? And he just collapses on his knees in agony and frustration. At that time, what does Krishna do? Krishna goes up to Arjuna and puts his arm around his shoulders. And he embraces him from the side and he says, oh Arjuna, the hearts of all these warriors are stricken on the death of Abhimanyu. They all loved him as if they were his own son. Now they are already stricken. Please don't increase their grief by words like these. And it behooves a Kshatriya like you to exhibit calmness and composure at such a time. Don't increase the hurt of the loved ones, rather plan how that hurt can be mitigated. And Krishna consoles Arjuna with encouraging words. So here, Arjuna also exhibits the natural emotions. This in passing, refers to Krishna, surely you must have known. But again, Krishna, what does he do? He does not exhibit, in one sense, his omniscience. Now, did Krishna know that Abhimanyu was being slaughtered like that? He knew. Now, why did he not tell Arjuna? Now, he did not tell Arjuna because he wanted to exhibit the glories of Arjuna to the world. And the next day is the day of the greatest devastation, when Arjuna alone penetrates the whole Kaurava army and practically single-handedly fulfills that impossible vow of killing Jayadratha. So sometimes Krishna has a higher plan, and as a part of the higher plan, he may hide his omniscience, and hiding his omniscience, sometimes he may allow some things which appear unfortunate or even tragic to happen to his devotees. So Krishna's omniscience is a servant of Krishna's Leela Shakti. Ultimately Krishna's, so now we will discuss two aspects. I was saying that after discussing pastimes where Krishna apparently does not exhibit his omniscience, we will discuss the implications of this. So there are some skeptical mundane scholars who study the Mahabharata, and they say, oh, actually it seems Krishna is not an omniscient God. And the Vedic conception of God does not include omniscience as one of the attributes of God. But that is a very silly understanding. because that same Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita has already told that he is omniscient. Vedaham Samatitani. So, let's look in the spiritual realm and then let's look in the material realm to understand the implications. Actually, in the spiritual realm, the essential purpose is the essential purpose of everything in the spiritual world is the experience of rasa. Now, rasa is actually it's a very sweet, intense, emotional reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. Now, before we came to ISKCON, we probably heard the word rasa only when we talked about amras or ganna ras, you know, sugarcane juice or mango juice. That's what the So our idea of rasa was just juice. Now, of course, that is a valid meaning of rasa, but in the bhakti sense, rasa has a very specific meaning. Rasa means emotion, and it's not just any ordinary emotion, a specific emotion of the love between Krishna and his devotees. So there is Bharat Muni who has written Natya Shastra, and there he describes how the devatas go to Brahmaji at the start of Kali Yuga. And they say, you know, in the past people could just hear and relish, but now as Kali Yuga people are becoming less intelligent, now just by hearing they will not be able to relish. They should not only have to hear, they will also have to see. Therefore, please describe to us a form of spiritual entertainment which is not only audible but also visible. In the past, you know, spiritual entertainment was through hearing. And the great sages would speak the pastimes of the Lord and people would hear. Said Kali Yuga, people cannot just be satisfied by hearing. They need a form of spiritual entertainment that is not only audible but also visible. So at that time, Brahmaji reveals to devatas the Natya Shastra. He tells them how, by performing drama in a particular way, very systematic, specific way, divine emotions can be evoked in the heart. And the emotion that is evoked when a drama is performed is called as rasa. So, Bharat Muni talks about rasa in more of an aesthetic sense. Rupa Goswami systematically analyzes rasa in a devotional sense. And rasa is not just emotion that is experienced at the point of watching a drama during certain emotional climaxes of the drama. But in bhakti, rasa is an emotion that is experienced constantly throughout the life. So, you know, bhakti, Krishna Leela is a drama on which the curtain never falls. The rasa of the Natya Shastra ends when the curtain falls on the drama. But bhakti rasa never ends because bhakti rasa is based on an eternal drama, the eternal drama of Krishna Leela. And therefore, this rasa is eternal. So, the purpose of everything in the spiritual world is the reciprocation of rasa. So, when it is the reciprocation of rasa, Krishna does what is required to maximize and intensify and heighten the rasa. So he acts as if he is not omniscient, just so that he can intensify the rasa. When Krishna goes to steal butter, you know, he pretends as if he doesn't know where the butter is. And they are searching in one pot and searching another pot, and they are looking here and they are looking there. And in this way, the sakhas who are there with Krishna, they get a sense of adventure. Hey, yes, we are doing something mischievous, we are doing something adventurous, let us find, where is the butter? And some of us may have read some detective novels in our childhood. And you know, for young children or for teenagers, that is fascinating. To search some, to look for some clues and to hunt something, find some treasure. So for the gopas, that sense of adventure, that sense of excitement, comes by searching for butter. Hare Krishna, I think please mute your mic. So now the sakhas can't have that sense of adventure if Krishna comes. Krishna comes, come, we'll steal butter, here the butter is. So if they go directly like that, then there is no excitement over there. So therefore, Krishna also covers omniscience and pretends, oh, let us search, is it in this spot, it is in this spot, it is in this spot. So earlier I described how Krishna with the sakhis also, with the gopis also, doesn't always exhibit his omniscience, so that, you know, he can reciprocate love, he can experience intensified separation from him, from the gopis. Similarly, Yashoda Mai, you know, Krishna has stolen butter and he's feeding the butter to the gopas, he's looking here and looking there. Oh, is Yashoda, am I coming from anywhere? Now he is actually God. He knows everything, but he pretends as if he does not know. So, Garuda Prabhu is one of Srila Prabhupada's senior disciples, very scholarly disciples. So he's written a book called Dance of Divine Love. And he gives the example in that. Dance of Divine Love is about the Ras Panchadhyay. And there he gives the example of how, to illustrate how Krishna covers his omniscience. So he described that Krishna Lila is like a drama. In this drama, Krishna is the central actor. He is the Nayakanam Shiroratnam. He is the crest jewel of all the Nayakas. And along with that, there are other Sahanayakas. Other actors are also there in the drama. And Yogamaya is the director of this drama. So Yogamaya makes Krishna dance. The director says, okay, raise your hands, put your hand down, wear this dress, go here, do this. So the actor acts according to director. So it's a very apt analogy, because in a movie, the director is rarely visible. So like that, Yogamaya is not actively present in Krishna Leela. She doesn't participate as a member in the Krishna Leela. She participates as a director. So she's invisible. That's why she's considered to be the director. But it is described that, can Yogamaya cover Krishna's omniscience? Yes, she can, by Krishna's will. That's why it is said that Yogamaya is directing Krishna in this drama, but the script of the drama is written by Krishna himself as the script writer. So in this way, Krishna's knowledge is covered as per his knowledge. If it's not too confusing, Krishna, he covers his omniscience according to his plan. So therefore he is covered and he is not covered also. Our spiritual sense, our awareness that we are not the body, we are the soul, that is covered not according to our will. It is covered against our will. But even when Krishna is lacking his omniscience apparently, it is according to his own will. And that's why, in that same Leela, Krishna is exhibiting as if he doesn't know where Yashoda Mai is. And later on when Krishna is tied up by Mother Yashoda, Krishna acts as if he doesn't know how to untie the knot. And the gopas come and try to untie, and he can't even tell. The gopas try. Just try, untie me. So the gopas not able to untie, and Krishna is also not able to apparently tell them how to untie. But that same Krishna, then what does he do? That same Krishna, he looks at the Hare Krishna, please switch off the mic. Whoever's mic is on. So that same Krishna, he looks at the Nalakuvar Manigru who have become trees, and he tells them, my devotee Narada has promised that I will deliver them. So now is the good chance to deliver them. So here, see, Krishna is apparently helpless. Gokantha Pashe Nanibadhyamanam Rurodamandam Navanita Bhongi. So, Krishna, how is he tied up? Sometimes, if a big politician is arrested, and nowadays there are so many scams going on, so when a politician is arrested, he's not put in an ordinary jail, he's put in a house arrest in a sort of very comfortable place. So like that, if Krishna is God, even first of all, he cannot be tied up. When he's tied up, he should be tied up with some silken ropes. But describe, what is he tied up with? Gokantha Pashena Nibadhyamanam. With the ropes that tie up the cows, he's being tied up. And Krishna is acting as if he's helpless. Rurodha Mandam. Rurodha means he's crying. And how is he crying? Mandam. Mandam is softly. When a small child cries, if he has some hope that somebody will listen to my crying, he will cry loudly. But if he knows nobody is going to listen to me only, then he also stops crying. Because what is the use of wasting the energy in crying? So like that, Krishna says, Yashoda Mai is so angry. She is not ready to listen to me, and nobody is going to listen to me. So he is crying. He is Rurodha Mandam. He is feeling, what is the use of? He is feeling unhappy at being tied up. So that's why that unhappiness, that sadness is coming out as tears. But he's under the use of tears. So he's crying as if he's helpless. Ruro Damannam Navaneet Bhogi. That Lord who has stolen Navaneet butter. He's been tied up. So Krishna acts so helpless as if he can be tied up by a rope, not just any special rope also, just the rope that ties up cows. So cows, that Gokanta passion is important because, you know, cows are not considered very powerful animals. And if a rope that is tied up an elephant or a rope that is tied up a hippopotamus, if it can be tied up, that must be a very powerful rope. But this is an ordinary rope and Krishna is not able to release himself even from that. But that same Krishna, next moment, you know, he can't untie the rope. So, you know, if you think about this Damodar Leela, it's so extraordinary. You know, if some, now the ulukhal, the grinding motor is not very small. It is quite big. So Krishna, he cannot break the rope, but he can drag the motor. How is that? So here, this is the meaning of Leela. Krishna does what is the best for enhancing the rasa. So why is he doing this? First of all, he wants to fulfill Narada's words, and secondly, he wants to intensify the emotions of the Vajvasi. So when they see the tree falling, then their love for Krishna gets intensified because of anxiety, and they experience that secondary rasa of bhayanaka, of horror, of fear, bibhatsa. All that comes in and increases their sthayi bhav, their normal emotion, which is maybe vatsalya, especially for the gopal, for the elderly gopal and gopis, that is increased. So Krishna wants to intensify the rasa so that sometimes he exhibits his omniscience and sometimes he hides his omniscience. So this is with respect to the Leela with his devotees when Krishna is sometimes manifesting and sometimes hiding his omniscience. Now with respect to us as sadhakas or as people in the material world, now does God know what is happening? You know, the Christians, the Muslims, they have a big complication to explain evil in this world. So some Christians, one Jewish rabbi, he came up with the idea that actually, we are not sure, does God know or does he not know? So there are people who come up with strange ideas like this. So we have to understand that Krishna does always know. So when a devotee is experiencing suffering, Krishna knows that the devotee is suffering. And Krishna allows that suffering to come up. Why does he allow that suffering? To protect us. Abhimantra, we know we should be protected from suffering, but how can Krishna allow suffering so that we are protected? Actually, the sufferings that come in this world, the adhyatmik, adhibhautik, the adhidaivik kleshas, they are certainly painful, they are certainly distressing, but far greater than the suffering, these are all sufferings at the level of the body and the mind, but we are not the body, we are not the mind, we are the soul, and at the level, the greatest suffering is forgetfulness of Krishna. So, you know, if somebody is busy watching a movie and while watching the movie, you know, there is the hero is being beaten up. Hero is being beaten up. And this person is, hey, what is happening? And actually while he is being beaten up, you know, there is a fire which is burning the chair on which the person is sitting. So then what happens? You know, if the person is too absorbed in the movie, and what happens, he will not even understand that the fire is burning my chair, and he may get burnt up. Or another example is, suppose sometimes we are dreaming, and when we are dreaming, we have a terrible nightmare, and as the nightmare gets worse, what happens? It's a natural defense mechanism of the body and the mind, that as the nightmare is becoming worse and worse, suddenly we wake up, what is this? And then we have to say, oh, actually it is nothing. So if the dream is very cozy, then there is no impetus to wake up. But when the nightmare becomes worse and worse, then we wake up and the nightmare ends. So like that, material existence with all its sufferings is like nightmare. And sometimes Krishna allows sufferings to come in this world so that he knows that the sufferings are coming. But for a devotee, especially for sadhaka, he will send sufferings from one side, and from the other side, he will send means, special mercy by which the devotee can wake up to the spiritual reality. So, you know that there is in medicine. I just recently, last couple of weeks ago, there was the spiritual scientist article I wrote about how pain protects. So they have described about this very strange disease called SIPA. SIPA is congenital insensitivity to pain with anhidrosis. In this disease, you know, the infant, the child, or the person who is having disease does not feel any pain from birth only. Because of certain disorder in the body, especially in the brain, he's insensitive to pain. And not only is he insensitive to pain, actually there is inner feeling of pain and there is external expression of pain through tears. the person neither feels pain nor gets tears. So when these Sipa children get some, start growing their teeth, they actually start plucking out their skin with their teeth. And they don't even feel any pain nor they, nor tears come out. Sometimes they scratch their eyes so badly with their hands that their eyes get sore and eyes get blinded also sometimes. Or a child with Sipa, is, for example, is playing and is playing, say, football. And while playing football, you know, maybe there is some wall over there, just boom, bang into the wall. And they fall down also and not feel any pain also. So there is foolhardy fearlessness over there. The child is fearless not because he is a heroic, but the child is fearless because he is utterly insensitive to pain. So the conditioned souls in this world are like that. You know, we are fearless. People, materialistic people are fearless. But they are not fearless because they are immortal, but because they are foolishly trying to forget their mortality. So the Sipa children, you know, their parents, there was one Sipa child, her mother, she was interviewed in New York. So she said, I have only one prayer. Let my girl feel some pain. Let my daughter feel some pain. Because if she feels pain, then she will be protected. So like that, you know, pain is a protection. The pains of this material world make us aware that this world is a place of misery. And they make us turn away from the world towards Krishna, where we can return back to Krishna and become eternally happy. So we should know that Krishna is allowing, if some problems are coming, yes, Krishna is allowing those problems to come. Krishna knows it. But Krishna is not a sadistic God who will delight in our suffering. Krishna is a compassionate God who wants to end all our suffering and so allow the smaller suffering to end the greater suffering. So He will send us relief. So especially when we are feeling whether distressed and troubled in any way, if we turn and take shelter of Krishna, try to remember Him, Krishna is aware. So you know, as devotees, suppose sometimes we are suffering. One of the fears of people is that I am suffering and nobody knows that I am suffering. Then we don't get any sympathy, we do not get any encouragement, we do not get any words of solace. Then that loneliness haunts people more than the suffering also. But a devotee, when he has faith in Krishna's omniscience, when he knows the suffering is coming, he knows Krishna is with me. So we should not think Krishna is up there causing the suffering to me. Krishna is in here in my heart, helping me to save myself, help me to face the suffering and to transcend the suffering. So if we turn and take shelter of Krishna prayerfully, and especially in times of distress, really try to remember Krishna. We, with the faith that Krishna is omniscient, Krishna is there and Krishna will help us, we'll find that that apparent suffering will become the source of the greatest sublime shelter. And that's why we have Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, when he's having terrible pain and cancer, he's telling, when Radha Maharaj starts singing the holy names, it doesn't get better than this. Why it doesn't get better than this? Yes, because Krishna is manifesting as the holy name and giving spiritual bliss so powerfully at a spiritual level that the pain at the physical level goes away completely. It becomes insignificant. So, you know, Krishna, the knowledge that Krishna is omniscient, that Krishna is there, knows our suffering, and Krishna is there to help. Krishna knows our suffering. Krishna knows the means to relieve us of our suffering. And He simply wants that we turn to Him. With that understanding, you know, even when sufferings come, a devotee can face them constantly. We will discuss this theme more when we talk about Krishna's omnipotence in our next class. So here I'll summarize. We discussed about how God is omniscient. So we discussed initially, Bhagavad Gita says that Krishna is different from all living beings because He knows everyone and everything. And we discussed anvayad and itartas. Krishna, because the whole universe is His body, everything that is His body, He knows it. And also Krishna is transcendental, beyond the material world. But He has His agents through which He is also informed. So that way Krishna knows everything directly and indirectly. And then we discuss various pastimes, and Krishna exhibits His omniscience to protect His devotees, especially Arjuna in the Mahabharata war. But then we discuss when Krishna apparently does not know and then gets to know with respect to the Brahma Vimohan Leela and with Chalva. And then we discussed about how Krishna acts as if He does not know at all. So with Draupadi in the Mahabharata when she was being disrobed, or with the Sakhas or with the Sakhis, he acts as if He does not know. And in this way, Krishna exhibits this very sweet and intense pastimes.